Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
Tropical Storm Harold made landfall on the coast of Texas just an hour ago. You can see heavy rain here on the radar. I'll show you how much has fallen and how much more there is to come.
Also, a Raleigh man charged with beating his elderly parents now faces a new charge, murder. What we expect to happen during today's hearing.
One person is dead, another injured after an explosion reduces a multi-million dollar home to rubble in just minutes.
Breaking news, you're looking at a live picture of Padre Island, Texas, where Tropical Storm Harold made landfall a short time ago. It's the first storm to make landfall in the U.S. this Atlantic hurricane season.
Harold is bringing heavy rain today to that south Gulf Coast of Texas, and Tropical Storm Franklin will make landfall on Hispaniola tomorrow. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a look at how much rain these storms will bring.
You can see all the heavy rainfall here around Corpus Christi, all the way as far north as Victoria and down almost to the southern tip. The storm made landfall at Padre Island around 11 o'clock this morning. And so the rain is continuing to push into the area. It's moving northwest at about 21 miles per hour, still has winds at 50 miles per hour. But of course, as it moves inland, those winds will weaken. And this will be more of a rain event than a wind event for folks there. However, it is moving nice and fast at 21 miles per hour. So that means that it won't sit in one spot and dump as much rain as a storm that was moving much more slowly. Here's a look at some of those potential rainfall totals. And in southern Texas, we're looking at as much as 4 to 6 inches of rainfall. And once it moves over into Mexico, it could dump as much as 10 inches of rain, and that could cause flooding there. Already, we've seen as much as 4 inches of rain around the Corpus Christi area. We'll take a look at some of the rainfall totals from radar estimated there just south of Corpus Christi at 4 inches already in one spot, and in others as much as 2 inches. Farther inland, it's maybe an inch to 2 inches, but all this rain will continue to push westward, and again, could be as much as 4 to 6 inches. We're also watching Tropical Storm Franklin closely. That storm likely to make landfall tomorrow morning here on the island of Hispaniola there near Haiti, and then it moves northward, potentially becoming a Category 1 storm over the weekend. And coming up in just a few minutes, I'll show you the computer model plots for where that one could be headed.
Thanks, Elizabeth. It's a crime that devastated a Raleigh neighborhood. Earlier this month, Christopher McCullough allegedly beat his own parents inside their home. Right now, we are just over an hour away from McCullough walking back into court on upgraded charges. WRL's Eric Miller is following this for us today. Eric, McCullough is now accused of murder.
Well, Jeff, McCullough's parents had been in the hospital ever since that brutal beating earlier this month. And then yesterday, McCullough's mother finally died from her injuries. That's prompted the murder charge that has McCullough back here in court at the Wake County Justice Center this afternoon. Now, McCullough has a long record of prior violent behavior stretching back years. He has 17 prior arrests with convictions for violating protective orders, strangulation, drunk driving, and more. He allegedly beat his parents back on August 6th. He did so in front of his 2-year-old son. The assistant district attorney said earlier this month that after that beating, McCullough took off with the boy, who he's only supposed to see on supervised visits. McCullough was already facing a kidnapping charge for that. Now, we're told McCullough's father is still in the hospital at this point, is still recovering. We'll be watching very closely to see what happens in court this afternoon. Jeff?
All right, Eric Miller live for us this noon. Eric, thank you.
At least one person is dead. Another is being treated for injuries after a home explosion and collapse in Mooresville. It happened around midnight near Lake Norman, north of Charlotte. First responders found one person coming out of the home as they got there. The second was found underneath debris. No word on what caused the explosion. County records reveal the home is worth an estimated $3 million. A large fire ripped through a house in southwestern Wake County around midnight. It happened on Piney Grove Wilburn Road near Fuquay Varina. Authorities say no one was living in the home. And happening right now in the WREL Live Center, an arrest in a cold case 32 years later in Durham. This here is 6-year-old Kenneth Lunsford. The Durham Police Department arrested him in connection to a cold case sexual assault that happened back in 1991. He is charged with first-degree burglary, first-degree rape, and attempted first-degree sexual offense. Back on July 27, 1991, a female victim reported that an unknown male broke into her home where he sexually assaulted her. Police were able to link Lunsford to this incident through a sexual assault kit initiative. He was taken into custody last week and remains in jail under a $1.5 million bond.
Donald Trump attorney John Eastman pushed a plan to keep former president in power following the 2020 election. He has surrendered now on charges in Georgia on the election subversion case. This comes as GOP candidates prepare to square off in their first presidential debate tomorrow. As Garrick Hake reports, even though Mr. Trump won't be on the stage in Milwaukee, he will still have a spotlight.
Former President Donald Trump once again poised to steal the spotlight this week from the party he seeks to lead, confirming on social media overnight that he plans to turn himself in at the Fulton County Jail on Thursday to be booked on wide-ranging charges he led a conspiracy to overturn the election in Georgia. According to court documents, his attorneys negotiated the terms of his release in advance, including a $200,000 bond, and promises that he not threaten or intimidate any co-defendant, witness, or victim, including on social media. While Mr. Trump prepares to head to Georgia, the rest of the GOP field setting their sights on Wisconsin. The RNC announcing overnight that 8 candidates have officially met their requirements for the first debate there Wednesday, notably leaving Mr. Trump off the list. After he posted over the weekend that due to his, quote, legendary poll numbers, he would not be debating, leaving the stage to his rivals.
We're excited about it. I think it will be a vigorous exchange. Even though Donald Trump will not be there.
The former president instead recording an interview with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson, hoping to counter-program the debate, according to two sources familiar with his plans. Governor Ron DeSantis, Mr. Trump's closest rival, rallying supporters in Florida and predicting on Fox News some Republicans will see Mr. Trump's debate absence as presumptuous.
I don't think they're going to look kindly on somebody that thinks they don't have to earn it.
Even as Mr. Trump's legal challenges grow, new polling from NBC News and the Des Moines Register shows his political durability. 51% of likely Iowa Republican caucusgoers telling us they believe Mr. Trump's false claim that he actually won the 2020 election.
I think there's still so much anger at the process, and I think he draws on that.
That was Garrett Hake reporting. New polling in Iowa shows Trump leading the GOP presidential field. 42% of likely GOP caucusgoers say the former president is their first choice. That's followed by 19% supporting Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. No other candidate reached double digits.
Wake County school leaders say they are working to expand access to student mental health services on campuses. This comes as the school system's holding its annual school counselor summit today. WREL's Keenan Willard shows us why district leaders say they are making student mental health a priority.
Counselors and student support staff from across Wake Schools came together here on campus at Apex Friendship High School, discussing new strategies to support student mental health this year. The district says counselors are talking through supporting social and emotional learning, positive behavior, and overall student mental health. Wake Schools expanded on-campus mental health support to 40 schools last fall. District leaders say in the wake of the pandemic, there's a need to expand those services even more across Wake Schools.
Our school-based mental health program actually is in the process of expansion. And so we are continuing to work in to increase those services, trying to find additional therapists and agencies that can provide those services in schools.
The CDC says in the last decade, there's been a rise in depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts among young people. Current counselors on Wake campuses say they've seen increased need as well among students from elementary school to high school.
Whether that is linking them to resources like food, shelter, transportation, or also some mental health support services.
The district has already identified a number of the new strategies they're talking through today to bring to Wake Schools campuses, including increased suicide awareness, restorative practices, and trauma-informed counseling. Keenan Willard, WREL News.
Next at noon, a shooting at a mall in Canada. The connection police believe the shooter had with at least one of the people shot.
Also, a terrifying cable car ride in Pakistan. How school children were rescued when that cable snapped almost 1,000 feet above a mountain.
And a mistrial in the case of a Holly Springs man accused in a string of pellet gun shootings. At 12:30, Ken Smith joins us with specifics on how the trial got to this point.
Download the new WRAL streaming apps on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV.
Three people are recovering from non-life-threatening injuries after shooting at a mall in Canada. Sirens going off there. This happened Monday afternoon in Edmonton. Police believe the shooter knew at least one of the victims. The shooter has not been identified and no word on an arrest. No one else was injured. Now the mall holds quarterly lockdown drills to prepare for such emergencies. Eight people, including six children, are safe today after their cable car was dangling hundreds of feet above a canyon in Pakistan. The children were on their way to school when one of the cables snapped, trapping them for hours. One of the children fainted due to the heat and fear. Rescuers used helicopters to get everyone to safety. Villagers use cable cars to travel between the mountainous regions. Officials in Pakistan have ordered all private chairlifts to be inspected for safety.
Thousands of people in North Carolina are forced to use contaminated water every day. Toxic chemicals were dumped into their water supply by a plant in Fayetteville. It's the subject of our latest WRL documentary premiering tomorrow night. WRL investigative documentary reporter Kristen Severance worked with WRL environmental reporter Liz McLaughlin to tell this complex story. Kristen talked to Liz about how the contamination happened and they fight for answers.
Joining me now is Liz McLaughlin, WRL climate change and environmental reporter. Liz, thank you so much for talking with me about this. You know, you have been studying forever chemicals. You've been reporting on forever chemicals for over a year now. You know, why are you so passionate about this subject?
It just all started with knocking on doors in the Fayetteville area near the Chemours Chemical Plant, formerly DuPont, where these forever chemicals have been polluted for decades. And every single person that I talked to had a story, and often a heartbreaking one, including a woman who was pregnant and drinking contaminated water. In America, in our own state, drinking water that has been linked to birth defects, to cancer, to a host of health problems. And every day, we're learning more about this class of chemicals called forever chemicals because they stay in the environment, in the human body, without degrading, learning more about the scope of this problem and how far this chemical contamination has gone, as much as 90 miles from the plant all the way to Wilmington. But you don't even have to be in this plant's backyard. 99.9% of humans have this in their blood. This is ubiquitous. It's in products we all use every day. It's just shocking. And Chemours has never denied they were the ones that did this dumping.
Right. And it's in waterproof clothing. It's in makeup. It's in fast food wrappers. I mean, it's really everywhere.
It's everywhere. And I know you just jumped in on this, but what has really stood out to you producing this documentary?
You know, I think the fact that it happened. You know, we learned about this contamination 5 years ago, and it's still happening. You know, meeting people, you and I, when we went to Fayetteville and we sat down face to face with all of these people, and we said, you know, how is this impacting you? One of the first people we interviewed, Carrie Atkins, said, I have cancer. My dogs have cancer. You know, Kelly Arthur said, my daughter had cancer. And their across-the-street neighbor had the same cancer. And these health studies are linked to cancer and birth defects. And then when you talk to the people impacted by it, it's really heartbreaking and it really stays with you.
And it's overwhelming. The scope of this just really is hard to understand.
It really is. You know, we put so much into the documentary. You know, I really think people will get a good understanding of kind of what it is and what happened. What do you hope people walk away with after watching it?
I really hope it can cut through some of the noise surrounding this. It's something hard to put into a short piece. This is really an opportunity to dig in and cut through some of the confusion. I mean, this chemistry is complicated. The litigation, the regulation surrounding this is very complex. And so to be able to dig into it a little bit, I think people will be really surprised how interesting this is and angered by it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big questions here. How do big polluters keep getting away with this? What is the evidence here? Why does our system value proving something's dangerous to take it off the market before proving it's safe before putting it on there? There's a lot of big questions. And I think, as many of the people we interviewed say in this documentary, this is a huge crisis of our time. We're trying to figure out how to deal with it, how to clean it up, who should pay for it. And we address a lot of that in the documentary.
Right. And everyone should care about it because it's in all of us, right? It really impacts all of us, not just people who live around this plant.
If you tried tomorrow to search, take PFAS out of your life, it would be nearly impossible. Right. Everything you can think of, from toilet paper to dental floss to yoga mats, has this stuff in there.
Yeah, it's really incredible. You know, you have been such an incredible partner. I could not imagine a better expert or someone to partner with for this documentary. Such a great co-producer and co-reporter. So thank you so much, Liz.
It's been so fun to dig in, and really, it's going to be a great documentary. You guys got to watch it.
Yes, hope everyone watches Forever Chemicals and learns a lot. We will be sure to keep following up on this incredibly important story.
And you can watch Forever Chemicals, North Carolina's toxic tap water, tomorrow at 7:30 on WRAL or on WRAL.com or on the WRAL documentary YouTube page at 8 o'clock.
It is 12:17. We have a lot of cloud cover out there, and it's already 91 degrees in Raleigh. We're going to keep going up from here, Elizabeth.
Yeah, take a look here. This is a live look at Pinehurst. And when I pulled this up about 5-10 minutes ago, there were still a bunch of people out here on the golf course. I wonder if they've decided to go in because it's feeling too hot and sticky. You can see a lot of high thin cloud cover out there right now. Again, 91 with a dew point of 67. We will climb into the mid-90s for this afternoon, and it will feel like triple digits in terms of the heat index. I'm not stopping kids from heading out to class. Class first day was yesterday. Thanks to Ethan Clark over at NC State for this view. It looks beautiful there at NC State this morning. And you can see everybody is back to normal there. And of course, traditional calendar schools start on Monday. So off we go. This is a look at the temperatures and the heat index together. Temperature on the left, heat index on the right. So it's 88 in Southern Pines. So it feels like 91. 91 in Fayetteville, feeling like 95. It feels like 95 in Durham and Raleigh. It feels like 97 in South Hill, 95 in Goldsboro and Clinton. So it already feels very hot. Actual highs, 95 in Raleigh, 94 in Durham, 99 in Fayetteville. So it's just it's going to be one of those days. We do have a cold front that will push across the area, and that's going to open the door to some cooler, drier air. Tomorrow is going to feel much more comfortable. We take a look at future cast. Here's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Notice more clouds start to build through the afternoon, and there's the possibility this evening when the front's coming through that there would be an isolated shower. It's not likely to be much. It's probably not going to be anything that will measure in the rain gauges, but an isolated shower is possible. Steamy today, but behind our front, look at what happens to our muggy meter. The dew point drops into the 50s, which is really hard to do in August. That's going to feel great, but it's really just one day. We're in the upper 60s Thursday and then well into the 70s on Friday and Saturday, and that's when it's going to feel really hot. Feeling like 102 this afternoon, but feeling like 96 again Thursday and potentially as high as 105 to 109 Friday and Saturday, and that could put us under a heat advisory. We take a look at our temperatures across the area again. Tomorrow's going to feel so nice. You see this morning temperature, 68 degrees, 67 on Thursday morning. So you're going to notice that drop in the temperature and humidity, but we do bounce back to 91 on Thursday. And then both Friday and Saturday looking hot, but behind Saturday's system, we're back into the 80s for highs on Sunday and Monday. We do have a small chance for some scattered showers and thunderstorms as we get into the weekend. Of course, lots happening in the tropics. We had Tropical Storm Harold make landfall in Texas. We'll go over some of the rainfall totals there and take a look at what's happening around the rest of the area, too, in the tropics coming up.
Much more to talk about. Elizabeth, thank you. The cost of home ownership is becoming out of reach for more people in the Triangle. Today at 4, we'll tell you why it's never been less affordable to buy a home and who's being priced out.
North Carolina is struggling to hire government workers, specifically transportation specialists and DMV workers. Today at 5, Chelsea Donovan investigates what the state is doing to fill a 21% vacancy rate. Well, still ahead this noon, today we could find out if we'll have to exercise a little more patience when waiting for packages. The important vote that could revive strike risks or keep deliveries on schedule.
And stopped in their tracks, the action the government took to protect people taking out student loans from scammers.
In just a few hours, we could find out if UPS workers accept a tentative labor contract, which was recently agreed upon by the company and the Teamsters Union. UPS delivers an average of more than 24 million packages a day. Roughly 340,000 UPS Teamsters are voting on the tentative deal that would mean higher wages for both full-time and part-time employees. A final tally could be revealed after 3 this afternoon. Microsoft is proposing a new deal to try to win final approval for its takeover of Activision Blizzard. The company is submitting an offer today to British regulators. Microsoft says Activision will sell the streaming rights to its game to Ubisoft, the maker of popular titles like Assassin's Creed and Far Cry. Microsoft wouldn't be able to release Activision games exclusively on its own Xbox cloud gaming service or exclusively control the licensing terms of those games for rival services. The UK is the only regulator to block the $69 billion deal.
The Federal Trade Commission has stopped two companies from scamming millions of dollars from student loan borrowers. The FTC says Express Enrollment LLC and Intercontinental Solutions LLC claim to be affiliated with the Department of Education. The agency says the companies tried to convince borrowers to pay for free government debt relief programs. You can find free resources for how to avoid these scams on the FTC website. It might be harder for Americans to find a low-priced car in the years to come. The number of new models that are under $20,000 has decreased. In 2017, there were about a dozen new models Americans could choose from for less than $20,000. This year, there's only one. The high prices may backfire on manufacturers if people choose to stop buying new vehicles.
Plans are in the works to remove a prominent feature from X, the new Twitter. The platform's owner, Elon Musk, posted on X, users will lose their ability to block other accounts on the app. Blocking a user on the platform prevents that user from interacting with an account, like seeing a user's tweet, quoting their tweet, or addressing them directly. The blocked user knows they have been blocked. Muting an account, meanwhile, prevents a user from seeing the account's posts. Muted accounts do not know someone has muted them. Snapchat is expanding further in generative AI features. It is testing a new tool called Dreams, which will let you put selfies of you and your friends into imaginative backgrounds. It's similar to other AI photo apps. Snapchat previously launched an AI-powered chatbot, which can respond with not only text, but also a snapback.
We're keeping an eye on conditions in Texas, where Tropical Storm Harold made landfall this morning. This is a live look at Galveston, Texas, just north of where Harold made landfall. Elizabeth is tracking the storm and tells us what's next.
Health misinformation became widespread during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now many Americans say they still struggle with what to believe. We'll break down the results of a new poll. And here are the winning lottery numbers from your NC Education Lottery on your screen right now.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
Tropical Storm Harold made landfall in South Texas, bringing torrential rain, gusty winds, and coastal flooding.
We understand there have already been a few tornado warnings there. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center tracking Harold. Elizabeth, where is it at now?
So the center of circulation made landfall at about 11 o'clock this morning. And of course, even first thing this morning, we started to see some of those rain bands making their way onshore. Of course, when a storm officially makes landfall, that's the center of circulation. So you already have seen half of it come through. So they'll continue to see some heavy rain. They've seen as much as 4 inches of rainfall along the coast right now. We'll likely see 4 to 6 inches by the time this is through across a good chunk of South Texas. It's moving to the northwest at 21 miles per hour, 50 mile per hour winds now. But of course, as we know, these storms, as they move inland, of course, will interact with the land. There's friction and the storm will begin to slow down a little bit. Here's a look at some of the rainfall. Ah, here they are. Wow, that's a lot of tornado warnings. When we looked at this right at noon at the beginning of the newscast, we didn't have any tornado warnings showing up. But right here, just in the last 15 minutes, we've seen 5 tornado warnings within some of these rain bands. So, of course, that's something that tends to happen. We'll see that happen here, too, when we have tropical systems move inland. We take a look at our potential rainfall, and we're looking at 4 to 6 inches in South Texas and as much as 10 inches as it moves on over into Mexico. And that could cause some flooding in some of the higher elevations there. And this is a look at some of the rainfall totals that we've seen so far right along the coast, anywhere from 2 to 4+ inches. Of course, these numbers will continue to go up as more of that system moves onshore. So again, looking at 4 to 6 inches, we've already seen as much as 2 to 4 in some places. We also take a look at Tropical Storm Franklin. This storm likely to move across the island of Hispaniola during the day tomorrow. So that's going to be Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Very heavy rainfall with this one as well. And it may move out here into the open water and become a Category 1 storm over the weekend. Let's take a look at some of the rainfall that we're expecting from this storm. We'll move back up here, and you can see some of these orange and white shaded areas. That could be as much as 15 inches of rainfall for them. This one also looks pretty interesting. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to follow the path as we take a look at some of our computer models, and I'll show you how far it stays off the coast of the United States and what some of the impacts could be here.
We have new developments this noon in a case of a Holly Springs man accused in a string of pellet gun shootings. His attorney confirms to WRL the case ended in a mistrial. WRL's Ken Smith is here with some background on this story. Ken?
You know, Jeff, based on what we were also able to confirm, the jurors were hung on 17 counts, meaning prosecutors were not able to convince all 12 jurors that Henderson Atwater was guilty in this case. Well, this case dates back to March of 2020 when the first pellet gun shootings were reported. Henderson Atwater was arrested the next year in 2021. He faced numerous counts of shooting into an occupied property and other counts of assault with a deadly weapon. Since his arrest, Atwater maintained his innocence, and now a jury has declared a mistrial on some of those counts. But Wake County DA Lauren Freeman says there are still similar pending charges against Atwater that her office will pursue.
We take our responsibilities, you know, to only pursue those cases where the evidence will support a conviction very seriously. And so, you know, certainly we are mindful of that there are allegations and concerns out in the community. We have reviewed these cases, and, you know, it's our intent always to try to seek justice in a fair and appropriate way.
Well, no word yet on when a new trial date will be set for the remaining charges against Atwater. For now, he remains in jail. We've reached out to his attorney for comment. Well, his attorney is currently in court, but is expected to get back to us. We'll keep you updated.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it. Ken, we know you will.
New efforts to prevent a triple-demic this fall. The FDA has approved a new vaccine to fight RSV in babies. There are also new vaccines coming for COVID and the flu. Kristen Dahlgren has more on what you need to know.
A new tool in the fight against RSV just approved by the FDA. The Pfizer vaccine, the first given to pregnant women to protect their babies from the dangerous respiratory virus for their first 6 months.
A lot of kids get sick with RSV like every winter, and it's kind of scary.
Gwen Marizuko was one of 7,000 pregnant women in the study. She still doesn't know if she was given the vaccine or placebo, but says her now 20-month-old is doing well.
I will say that this past winter, when a lot of families in our community were affected by RSV, our family was not.
A new monoclonal antibody for RSV also recently approved for use in babies and children, as well as a new vaccine for the elderly.
Together, we think this is going to have a major impact on the number of hospitalizations.
Doctors are also hopeful about new COVID boosters, expected to be authorized soon as the country sees an uptick in cases.
EG5, also known as Eris, is now the dominant strain, but it's closely related to previous mutations. So unless another variant pops up, experts predict new boosters should be a good match.
We should start to think about the updated COVID vaccine almost like our annual flu vaccine. Now is the time to fill up that immunologic gas tank to protect us as we move into the winter.
Doctors also expect a good match from this year's flu vaccine. Americans of all ages being encouraged to roll up their sleeves for what may be new tools against a triple-demic. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
Many Americans say they struggle with what to believe when it comes to health information. In a new survey conducted by KFF, formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation, participants were asked about 10 false health claims. 93% of people said they trust their doctors for health information, but a quarter of people say they turn to social media for guidance. And happening right now in the WREL Live Center, an update to a story we brought you earlier in the newscast. We have learned that home explosion that happened near Lake Norman, that home was owned by Tennessee Titans player Caleb Farley. One person is dead because of this explosion, another being treated for injuries. This happened around midnight near Lake Norman, which is just north of Charlotte. No word on what caused the explosion.
Letting your baby spend more time in front of screens could affect their development. Pediatricians found out a link between a high amount of screen time and increased chances of developmental delays. Researchers found one-year-olds who had more than 4 hours of screen time a day were more likely to experience developmental delays in speech and problem-solving skills by ages 2 and 4. We're in week 4 of this year's Clear the Shelters event, and today's shelter spotlight is the Wake County Animal Center. Just take a look at these lovable guys, Rusty, Hash Brown, and Faye. Rusty's an adorable, sweet older gentleman. If you have a thing for freckles, look no further than this guy. Hash Brown is in the middle here, a pint-sized bundle of fun. Faye is a silly soul, just patiently waiting on her forever home.
Still to come, the state that's seen the highest number of child deaths in hot cars. We'll share two easy ways to help you remember to check your back seat whenever you exit your car.
Plus, we'll dig into an amazing and maybe frightening application of artificial intelligence, reading your mind. First day of school, the traditional school year calendar is almost here, and schools will be looking at ways to spend their unused pandemic funding. WRL investigates Sarah Kruger as a preview of a story you'll see only on WRL.
This is the last full school year of COVID relief funding, and the clock is ticking to spend hundreds of millions of dollars or risk losing it. From PPE at the beginning of the pandemic to bonus pay to teachers who stayed in the classroom during the COVID disruption to programs to help kids not fall too far behind. North Carolina school systems spent billions. Tonight on our news at 5:30, WRL investigates the money that is unspent and the programs that school systems hope to continue even when this COVID funding goes away. Sarah Kruger, WRAL News, Raleigh.
This summer, Florida became the leader in child hot car deaths in the nation. 6 of 18 so far. Officials stress awareness as a simple solution for a big problem. Some suggest leaving a purse or shoe in the back seat with the child. But Kids in Car Safety, a nonprofit organization, says education and awareness only go so far. Prevention starts with parents' perception of hot car deaths.
We believe technology is really going to be the solution to this, because in order to rely on a shoe or any other safety tip or habit to protect a child, you're relying on that parent admitting that this could happen to them.
Some modern vehicles come with backseat alarms already installed. Florida already requires backseat alarms in daycare vehicles.
Artificial intelligence can write papers, make music, but what about reading minds? We'll take a closer look at the technology researchers say can predict what you're thinking.
And a steal of a deal returns to thousands of theaters across the country. How businesses are hoping a discount gimmick turns into a big payday for them.
How about this live look at 12:44 in the afternoon? Carolina Beach, as you watch WRL News, available on Spectrum and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. Definitely a beach day with the heat and humidity. You probably know artificial intelligence can write essays, create music, even make pictures. But what if the technology was also able to predict what your brain was thinking? Jackie Ibanez takes a look at the AI program researchers say can read minds.
How comfortable would you be if artificial intelligence could read your mind? Well, researchers in Singapore say it's already a reality, sort of. So how does it work? A team from the National University of Singapore puts study participants inside an MRI machine. There, each person is shown more than 1,000 images of various foods, animals, activities, and more.
Each lasts for 9 seconds, with 9 seconds break in between.
The MRI machine takes brain scans while they look at each picture. Those scans are then coded so they can be processed by an artificial intelligence program, which generates images. The goal is to get the AI to understand the link between the person's brain scans and the images they're shown.
It can understand your brain activities, just like ChatGPT understands the natural languages of humans.
Researchers say the mind-reading magic happens when people return for a second MRI session. This time, the AI takes the new brain scans and creates an image of what it thinks the person could be looking at, using what it learned from the first set of brain scans to determine what picture it should make.
So that's basically how we can read your mind.
That was Jackie Ibanez reporting. The team hopes to develop it to AI so it can be incorporated into other technology like virtual reality headsets, which will allow people to move around the metaverse with their minds instead of having to use controllers.
Two Americans took the 100-meter titles for Team USA at the World Track and Field Championships in Hungary.
Here comes Sha'Carri Richardson! Sha'Carri's done it!
In a stunning upset, Sha'Carri Richardson beat out top Jamaican sprinters Sherika Jackson and Shelly-Ann Fraser-Price. Richardson also claimed her personal best of 10.65 seconds. Her 100-meter win also brings a world title back to Team USA for the first time since 2017.
Noah Lyles is going to have to find something special. Letsili Tabana. Wow, Noah Lyles led right at the line. Hughes was in the mix.
Talk about a surprise. Men's sprinter Noah Lyles won the 100-meter with a personal record of 9.83 seconds. Lyles has won gold at the last two world championships in the 200-meter. Congratulations to them. Blistering speeds.
Move over, Usain Bolt. That's fast. Don't blink or you'll miss that. Elizabeth Gardner has been taking a lot of time tracking what is happening in our tropics. And believe me, there's a lot going on out there, Elizabeth.
There is. Well, yesterday the map was especially full. We're starting to see a few of these systems resolve themselves. Of course, yesterday we were tracking Hillary, which, of course, has dissipated, of course, leaving some damage and a lot of rain in parts of the Southwest, including California. And then, of course, Harold moved onshore here just a couple of hours ago. And that storm continuing to dump a lot of heavy rain on southern Texas. Next to watch is going to be Franklin. Franklin's going to move over the island of Hispaniola, which is where we have Haiti and the Dominican Republic. That storm likely to continue to track to the north, and I'll show you where it is headed off the coast of the United States coming up in just a minute. This one's interesting. Earlier this morning, this wave coming off the coast of Africa had a 60% chance of developing, and it's been downgraded to a 50% chance. And then this one here, just to the north, has a 20% chance of developing. So now we have four areas that we're watching. Of course, here's a look at the HD Doppler network, taking a look at the radar here, and you can see a number of tornado warnings that are popping up there inland as the system moves in, which is very normal, pretty typical of a tropical system as it moves inland. And that system, of course, has a spin on it. And as it starts to interact with the surface, there's a lot of friction that goes on, and that can spin up weak tornadoes. So that is happening inland of Corpus Christi, and some very heavy rain with this system as well. We take a look here. Of course, it's moving to the northwest at 21 miles per hour, 50 mile per hour winds. Those winds will begin to die down fairly quickly. You can see it becomes a tropical depression by this evening, and then just a low pressure system looking at as much as 4 to 6 inches of rainfall along the coast of Texas. But as it moves on into Mexico, in some places it could dump 10 inches of rain, which could cause some flooding as it moves into some of those areas with higher elevations. Here's a look at Tropical Storm Franklin tomorrow at around 8 a.m. We're looking at that storm starting to make landfall there on the island of Hispaniola, and then it moves northward potentially over the weekend, becoming a Category 1 storm. We'll take a look at our computer model and follow where this storm is headed after that. And you can see a good spin on this storm. Again, it could be a hurricane at this point, spinning out here in the Atlantic, potentially gaining some strength. And then we'll pause it here off the coast of North Carolina. Bermuda is here. So about halfway between Bermuda and the United States, the coast of North Carolina is likely where this storm will pass. Now, it's going to be, you know, close enough that we could have some heavy surf, some erosion, some high rip current danger. That will be late in the weekend and early next week. So that's something that we'll be watching very closely as it sort of skims just offshore. The rainfall potential with this storm here on the island is likely to be 5 to 10 with an isolated 15 inches, again, on the island of Hispaniola. Around here, things are quiet. We're looking at mostly cloudy skies across the area right now, looking at temperatures in the mid to upper 90s for highs this afternoon. Of course, our front tonight drops our temperature tomorrow into the 80s. It'll be hot the next few days then, and another drop for Sunday and Monday.
We've heard the excuse, my dog ate my homework. Well, what about my dog ate my passport? How a golden retriever's new chew toy could prevent her owner from enjoying the event of a lifetime.
Here's a look at last night's winning Powerball numbers on your screen. We wrap things up with a look at a few of the headlines we're following for you today. A man accused of beating his parents is expected to appear in court today on an upgraded charge. Christopher McCullough's mother died from her injuries yesterday. McCullough is accused of attacking his parents at their home on Ingate Way earlier this month. We'll have updates from the courthouse as he's charged with murder beginning on our news at 4.
We now know the home that exploded near Lake Norman is owned by Tennessee Titans football player Caleb Farley. Charlotte stations are reporting that Farley's father died in the explosion. Another person is being treated for injuries after the incident. County records reveal the home is worth an estimated $3 million.
A large fire ripped through a house in southwestern Wake County around midnight. It happened on Piney Grove Wilbon Road near Fuquay Arena. Authorities say no one was living in the home.
If you've missed out on any of the summer's blockbusters, you may want to leave your calendar open Sunday. It is the second annual National Cinema Day, and that means you can watch anything playing on the big screen for just $4. The event gives studios a chance to build interest in their fall lineups during the previews.
Just days before a Boston couple was supposed to leave for their destination wedding in Italy, they discovered their dog chewed up one of their passports. The couple came home and found their Chickie, the golden retriever, playing with a new chew toy. Turns out it was the groom's passport. Once they got a closer look, they realized the damage was really bad.
It was like every single important page, like all of his personal information completely torn up. His picture page was torn up. The barcode on the back of the passport was torn up.
Well, the couple has reached out to their congressman and senator for help. And for now, they will just have to wait and see. The bride says there's no plan B, so she's remaining positive and planning for a wedding in Italy.
Chickie didn't want them to go, maybe. Mm. Our pet of the day is a wonderful beagle boy with a heart of gold. Meet Franklin from Tri Beagles. He was brought to that facility from the Vance County Shelter. Franklin enjoys running around the yard with his human and canine buddies, and then it's time for a long nap. He likes to go for walks and sniff everything in nature. Franklin has done well with children and other dogs and is a perfect mix of playful and calm. To learn more about adopting Franklin, visit trybeagles.org.
Certainly hope that they got the dogs out for a walk earlier today or wait for tomorrow because it's going to turn the corner tomorrow.
Now, sweat through today, but tomorrow will feel really nice for mid-late August for sure.
NBC News Daily is next on WRAL, your next local news update coming your way in 30 minutes.
You can get breaking news updates anytime with our WRAL News app. We appreciate you spending some time with us. Have a great day.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.